and welcome to the spa. This is a Spa Girls mini session, brand new, very exciting. Today we are talking about five mistakes that newbie indie authors make. So, yeah. Wendy, what's number one?
Thinking your first book is going to sell you millions. Now, this is a trap we all fall into. We finish the book because it's just got so much enthusiasm and we've loved it and it's like the best thing ever out there. Mm-hmm. But we forget and we lose sight of the fact that this is a long game. First book I published was traditionally, I sat back and waited for the millions to roll in and didn't do what I should have done, which is get on the next book and start going for longevity. And that's the thing about this career, unless you're an outlier, and that's very rare, chances are your first book's not going to make you millions. So just be realistic, I think, is what I want to say there.
Perfect.
Yep.
Number two, Cheryl.
So the second mistake, and this is actually a doozy, is not getting your work edited. You are not good enough. You cannot see the mistakes, and neither can your aunties, cousins, sisters, daughters, friend.
Yeah.
So, hire a professional or swap with a professional. So you can edit their book and they can edit yours as long as they have that ability. So not just somebody that can smack it through a spell check, which you should do. Absolutely. I think we all have Pro Writing Aid or Grammarly, and they are definitely, definitely well worth the money. But absolutely find somebody to edit your book before it ever hits the shelves.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Number three. That's you, Sha.
Really?
Yeah.
That's three already. I'm just so not used to this fast pace. This is similar to editing. This is where you really need a good cover. And by a good cover, I mean one that your readers will understand what your book's about, not necessarily what you've envisaged in your head. So you've got to really meet the market for your covers. So if you're writing a paranormal romance with wolves, you need to look at those covers with for those similar type of books, and yours has to fit in. This is not the time to be an outlier. This is not the time to be different. This is not the time to represent an accurate scene from your book. It's all about other people. And it's fine for you to have an image in your head of what it looks like. And if you want to go ahead and draw that yourself or whatever, that's fine, but keep it for your office wall. For your book, it's now a product when you're selling it to other people, so you've got to have the packaging just right. And if you, depending on your budget, you can get a custom design one, you ask around other authors for recommendations, or you can buy what they call a premier cover, which is where a designer will sell you a cover that, say, for example, using the paranormal romance example, they'll have a range of different covers that would fit that particular subgenre. And then when you buy it, the designer will put your name and your title on it. And that's what's called a pre-made. So they've already designed it. Mm-hmm. So definitely, definitely, unless you're in the graphic design trade and know book covers, even just being a graphic designer isn't enough. You've got to understand the marketing. It's super important. Too many books get buried and the masses that are getting published because of poor covering. If somebody is not attracted to your book, then all the wonderful story inside is not going to make any difference if the packaging is wrong.
Mm. Yeah.
Harsh, but fair.
Very true.
Very true. Okay. So that goes to number four then, I believe.
It does.
Are we going?
That's you, number I believe.
Counting.
Good
counting.
It's me.
Go,
I'm good at the counting.
Nice. Counting. Oh.
Okay, so number four newbie mistake that newbie authors make is thinking that family and friends are going to buy their book, part one. And part two is actually you thinking that you really do want them to buy your book because you don't. So, often family and friends that we think are going to buy our books don't, which is kind of shocking in some ways. I remember thinking that I was going to get certain people buying it and then they didn't. And then actually,
I remember us all having this conversation about it.
Mm. Yeah. And then
hurtful,
weirdly,
right? Because you don't feel supported.
It is hurtful.
Yeah.
So you kind of think, oh, why are they not supporting me? But actually, honestly, you don't want them buying your book because Great Aunt Mary reads thrillers and you've just written a happy rom-com and she goes onto Amazon with her thriller background and reading history on Amazon, yeah. purchase your book, and suddenly the Amazon algorithm's going, I didn't realize this was a thriller. And then suddenly you're getting shifted over into being recommended to other people like Aunt Mary. Did I call her that?
Great Aunt Mary, I think it was.
Great Aunt Mary, Great Aunt Mary. I do actually have a Great Aunt Mary, or nice. I did once upon a time. And suddenly Amazon's going to start offering your book up to other readers like Great Aunt Mary who are thriller readers, and they're not going to want your rom-com. Like, you're getting the wrong readers. So you only want people who read the kind of books that you've written to buy your book, and because you're training the Amazon algorithm, you're training all of those automated systems.
Next, Aunt Mary.
Yeah, Aunt Mary, not allowed to buy.
I guess the caveat is if Aunt Mary just loves that kind of book and that's all she reads.
That's right.
Perfect. She is your target audience. Yeah. You win.
Yeah. 100%, you win twice. 100%. Yeah, win twice. Family's buying it and you're getting the right audience.
Yeah.
So I think if your family want to support you, maybe they could be telling others about your book.
Yeah.
But if they're not interested in reading your genre, don't let them buy your books.
Like, I think going with the expectation of them that they won't be interested. Yeah. I know, again, harsh but fair. It's sort of what's often so important to us, and we, as a writer, you understand how much effort and love and blood, sweat and tears, and like a piece of your soul's in that work often. But other people often don't get it, particularly if they're not in the writing game or the creative industry.
100%.
Part
A was thinking that people are going to buy it, and part B was actually you don't want them to buy it. Which we've talked about.
Yeah, there are other reasons than the fact that they might not like it.
Fair enough too. Like, I mean,
marketing reasons.
So that's it. So number five, Wendy, that's you.
Not starting an email newsletter list. I think that's a biggie. We didn't. And then we were behind the eight ball. But the thing is, you own that list. That is your property. It's not, no one else has access to it. This is your way, direct link to the lead readers. So the sooner you can start and nurture that and grow that, that means that every time you send out a newsletter, you're going straight into the living rooms of the people who love you. And that's exactly what you want. There is so much stuff out there about what to put in them, even before you start to sell your first book. You can put snippets and covers and all sorts of things, but start your email newsletter and get it kicking over now. We'll talk more about building lists and stuff at a later date. But for now, basics is start your email newsletter.
And you can start it before you publish the book, even. We know authors who've done that very successfully. Yeah. It's not as crazy as it sounds. Because it does sound crazy, right? To start a newsletter list when you don't have a book.
Totally.
But it's not.
But it's not.
We promise. No. Yeah. We promise it's not crazy, and it's something you should do.
Yep. Okay. We're crazy, but I don't think it's crazy for you to do that.
Yeah. No, it is not crazy. Yeah. All right, that's our top five tips for, well, not tips, it was actually mistakes that newbies make, and we've given our tips on how to rejig those mistakes into positive things. So, awesome.
Hi, and welcome to The Spa. This is The Spa Girls mini session. Today we're talking about five ways to end your chapter so readers want more. So that's exciting. Now, number one.
So let's leave them in the middle of an action. So we have a climatic event that we thought up in the first chapter, and the second chapter is going to lead on from there. So we're not going to give them everything that's happening. We're just going to say something happened, or we're going to be shocked that something's happened. End.
That's exactly right.
But it's an action thing, right?
More
in it, like I'm thinking of it in terms of like, so my urban fantasies, like I don't know, maybe I have more of the action scenes than you guys do in kind of, but I'm like in a fight scene and someone's just punched someone and then fall into the floor and then you leave it and you go to chapter two because, oh my God, are they going to survive? Is this person going to get them and that's it? Or, you know, like that kind of action.
And it's a chance to then switch so that the second head can come in, the second point of view can come in see the scene in a different point of view, you know?
The person that's fallen.
Gosh, my tooth fell out, you know, that sort of thing.
It was real then. Waiting for the blood to come.
Number two.
That's an example of a surprise ending, right? Well, we'll talk about that later. But number two, leave them with a question, ask a question. So the character can ask a question or the reader can ask a question in their mind. So, for example, holy heck, I think Luke is my father. Is he my father?
Yeah, Luke, I am your father.
End chapter.
Yeah.
End chapter. Yeah.
That man in the big black mask, my father. Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. So yeah. Asking a question. It doesn't have to be even a huge question. It can just be a small question. It can be, hang on a second, is that so-and-so? I thought of you writing a cozy mystery, for example. Could, you know, sweet little Aunt Mary actually be the murderer here?
Is that possible?
An internal question. I think asking a question always gets us moving on. I also think the best way to think of this is how when you're in the old days, showing your age here, but when there were commercial breaks in between on episodic TV shows, you know, they always ended often on a question, you know.
Because we want the reader to come back.
That's right.
Yeah. You want to get the last thing you want is them to put the book
I
down.
I think it's a newbie mistake to that we all did, that we don't finish the end of a chapter. My first editor was big on it.
Right?
Make it punchy, Wendy. I don't want nothing, you know, just because the grass is growing
doesn't mean you have to talk about it.
Want to start now. That was my thing. They always they resolved something and then they'd go to sleep or they'd leave the room. And that is just like a, you know, just the energy of that goes.
So number three is
create an arrival. So you're in a room talking about something, dun dun dun, door opens and shocking person walks in, or long lost father who you thought was dead walks in, or great Aunt Mary walks in with a chicken in one hand and you weren't expecting the chicken. I don't know. But create someone coming in. Create something, aliens land, you know, an arrival, something that's maybe unexpected.
Someone we thought was dead, or someone who you've been gone for 15 years and now you're back suddenly type thing. It's
the last person your character wants to see arrives, you know, you've just spilled mud all over yourself. You've got milkshake snorting out your nose and your crush walks in or whatever, you know, like up a situation, someone's arriving, that means that person's going, oh my god, I have to find out what happens next, which I guess is the point of everything that we're talking about here. So
and with that, it could be they've just opened the door and they see this person, but you as a reader don't know who that person is, they're so shocked.
Yeah,
and you've got to read on to find out who it is.
Exactly. Or it could be a giant cake on the doorstep and you know that you can hear somebody breathing inside the cake, just saying.
It could be. Your mind went there. I mean, why not? You know, I mean.
A giant person cake. That's exactly right.
We've all used that in our books too.
Several times.
One of them. I mean,
a TV crew arrive on the doorstep. I don't know.
In the cake. I like it.
In the cake. Yeah.
All together in the cake. It's a big cake.
I think number four is someone said something shocking. So this could be
really big cake.
A really big cake.
And it was shocking to them.
And it was shocking to them that the cake was there. But the real shock was that it was banana and they like chocolate. So,
I think it's unless they were deathly allergic to banana and somebody's just delivered them a banana cake,
Let's pull it back. We'll pull that back now. And I think this, when someone says something shocking, it's like,
I
don't love you anymore.
But you believed one thing and then someone's out of the blue say something
and it's
you're
like upsetting.
I beg your pardon, you're like, I beg your pardon, I didn't know that great aunt Sandy's niece 15 times removed, you know, rode elephants for a living when she grew up.
I feel like that's not shocking enough. Shocking has to be big.
I'm your twin brother.
I am your father.
On your back.
Those are shocking.
She did it naked on her back and she's always been a prude and she's now a nun. You know, like there's just so many options there. No, but something really shocking that just jolts you and you're like, want to read on quickly to find out what they're talking about.
And I just say, for the sake of keeping the story actually readable, it's shocking to the character from whose point of view it is. Like, Wendy may not be shocked by a naked elephant rider at her doorstep. No. However, I may be.
Some people
may. It's got to be about the character, what's shocking to them, I think, to keep
Absolutely. It does.
I mean, that's it for all of these situations, right? It's all about what's shocking. And I think it's also about moving the story forward. Like, I don't just make some kind of random shocking revelation that's then got nothing to do with the rest of the story and is never mentioned again. Because I kind of think that's superfluous. Like, you kind of want something that's going to move the story forward.
Every chapter has to be like that.
Yeah. So it's not just whatever you can think of that's most freaky out.
I just finished writing a chapter where he'd thought about the heroine for years. He'd never seen her. They just, whatever had happened. And then the scene was he walks in the door and there she is. Mm-hmm. You know, bomb. Like, holy, when did that happen? Okay, who's on number five?
Number five. So we're going to leave our readers with a big reveal, a big revelation, something that they had never anticipated in their whole entire life. And it's happening right now in front of them. And how are they going to react? And is the revelation something that's actually physically happened or something that they've just heard about? And so, therefore, are they dealing with it in an external way or an internal way? Are they going to be thinking about it as we leave the chapter, or are they actually going to physically do something because, you know, they found this out and it's so amazing or so awful or so... Again, shocking. Yeah.
So it could be because it's different. Like, it's almost wider than shocking. Like, shocking is one aspect of it, but a revelation could be, like you say,
this changes everything.
It could be good. It could be bad. It could be, you know, it changes everything.
But everything changes from that moment. That's a pivotal moment.
Yeah. That would, you wouldn't want to have too many revelations at the end of chapters, though. That's a special kind of chapter. I feel like.
Mix it up. I think with all of these ideas, it's mixing it up to keep it. And the whole idea is, to think of it as pulling your reader through the story and preventing them from, like I said before, closing that book or putting
there's a lot of readers out there, and I didn't realize this because I can stop anywhere, but a lot of readers won't stop until the end of a chapter. And so that's how you and so if you get to one of those readers and they're at the end of a chapter and then there's this massive revelation or something shocking happens, they're going to be like, oh, I better just check the next chapter just to make sure. Is that what happens to you? And then suddenly you're in the next chapter and you have to read the next chapter. Next minute, it's 2 a.m. in the morning, you're due to go at 6 o'clock for a run, and you're a little bit
Because I do that every morning. It's like,
well, yeah, I mean, that's why I said running at 6 a.m. because I knew that was you all over. But
As authors, that's what we want for our readers. We want them to be so hooked they don't want to put that book down.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what you're doing. So you're not just writing. Each of those chapters is a very definite endpoint that you need to think of in and of itself,
And it is something you need to really work on because that's the way you're going to get them to read through. Yep. But I think we've covered off everything there.
We're going to talk about chapters more in our
absolutely.
Little but session. For now, and just remember, in terms of, don't overthink things, keep it exciting, but also remember you don't have to hit a specific, I've seen that quite with a lot of new writers, you have to have, you know, 1,500 words or 2,000 every chapter, so they're kind of writing to the word count rather than writing to the elements in the chapter. So I'd say think of your hooks pulling that reader through over and above whatever word count it is.
Perfect.
Very good.
All righty.
See you in the next session.
Exactly. Bye. Keep well. Bye.